heard First Take.
I mean, it's just pathetic, but it's predictable.
We've heard your take.
You have to take care of the people and the athletes. Consider them more important than the money.
Now it's time for Jason's Take, exclusively on the First Take Your Take podcast.
It's First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jeff Dickerson sitting in for Jason Fitz on this Monday. First Take is brought to you, First Take Your Take, brought to you by My Computer Career, Training for a Better Life. This story caught my attention over the weekend on ESPN.com. A bunch of Pac-12 players, football players, have joined together to try to force some serious changes and make some demands to these universities of the conference. Some of the demands include allowing students to opt out during the COVID-19 pandemic without eligibility loss or spot on the team, creating a task force to address social injustice issues, directing 2% of the conference revenue to support financial aid for low-income black students, eliminating excessive expenditures with administrators and coaches, reducing pay, and there was some talk of long-term health care insurance. This is some pretty, unprecedented stuff that these college athletes are banding together to demand changes. This morning on First Take, Paul Feinbaum joined Stephen A. and Jay Williams, and Feinbaum said college football isn't safe right now, and the universities aren't being transparent.
College football is playing a game of Russian roulette right now, Molly, and they're not down to many bullets, and this was a significant moment because there is a great fear across the country. It's not only out in on the West Coast that college football isn't safe right now. I have heard, and I've shared with you occasionally, various reports from campuses where they've had 40, 50 players testing positive. The universities are not being transparent. We hear from some that have tested hundreds of people and have one or two positive tests. We've seen some programs shut down. But I want to share something before we get too deep into this that I just saw. Caleb Farley is one of the top cornerbacks in the country. He played at Virginia Tech. He's a projected first-round pick. And the other day, he opted out of the season, and he wrote an article on Pro Football Talk, and he said, without testing and wearing masks, I didn't feel safe at practice. He said that a couple of weeks ago, everybody on the team, or most everybody, went down to Myrtle Beach, which isn't too far from the campus, take a weekend off, and they came back without being tested. He said, we're all together, working out, close to each other. You have no real idea who might have it, if anybody has it. We're 100 deep, and nobody is wearing masks, and that's the culture right now in college football.
Listen, I definitely support what the players are doing. I definitely think that the players have to stand up and take a position. I think, Paul, you've been absolutely on the money for weeks when you've said college football is devoid of leadership. You basically got the Big Five commissioners basically running, the money-making portion of the sport, basically. But outside of that, it is what it is. They're in a position to make demands right now. Everybody's trying to capitalize on the moment that we're living in, where you see white America and beyond portraying or verbalizing their mea culpas to some degree, needing to listen more, needing to understand that you've been exploiting the athlete for far too long. You hear all of these different kind of issues. So this is what this breeds from, and I can see these folks taking this position, and I applaud them, and I understand it. And if anybody's justified as doing so, it's the college athlete that plays at the college football player that plays at a big-time program, because we all know that there needs to be some level of compensation beyond a scholarship that's forwarded in their direction, and that hasn't necessarily been the case. I just don't know what this will amount to be quite honest with you, because they can make these demands, but as we continue to try to figure out what to do next, where to go, and college football is just as lost as anybody, if not more so, I don't know what ultimately will be accomplished. It's a good try on their part. How successful it's going to be remains to be seen. I'm doubtful about it.
You know why you're doubtful about it, Stephen A.? Because athletes are prohibited from securing representation to actually enhance
Absolutely.
Their voice while they're being asked to sign liability waivers to participate on college campuses. Paul Feinbaum, that story that you just told me, that is atrocious. That makes me sick to my stomach. And look, I understand the value that schools bring educationally, and I understand how students who have student loans can sit there and say, well, you know, I had to pay back my student loans and these athletes should be grateful. That is no longer the case. And what I like about what just happened is these athletes are firmly putting their feet in the ground and they're saying, here's my term sheet. Let's start negotiations. You may think 50-50 revenue share split is absurd, but it's a starting point. You may think 6 years extended of healthcare benefits are absurd, but it's a starting point. And all these things that they're asking for, the one thing that I recognized my last year in school, and I wasn't strong enough at that time to own my own voice, and because I had a great experience at Duke, but during a pandemic, in the midst of chaos, brings incredible opportunity. And these players understand that right now, if it wasn't for their labor, a lot of these conferences and schools wouldn't be able to survive. And if there's a beautiful time to do it, I don't know how they sustain it. I don't know how they aggregate somebody to continue to be their voice and articulate these things on their behalf to fight for it consistently because they're prohibited from doing that. But they can find some way to sustain it. This is going to change the whole game, Paul. Just not in college football, college basketball too. It could be a different game by the time we get to 2021.
Well, I totally agree, Jay. And here's the problem. We all know what's going on here. And I don't want to upset anyone who holds it dear to their heart that college football is pure, but it's not. This is about money, which is fine. We're all in business together. We're all trying to make ends meet. But there was an article the other day, guys, in the Washington Post that had it was a player that taped a conversation in the SEC with all of the various people that were involved, including the commissioner and medical personnel. And someone on the call, it was an administrator, told the group, the main reason we're bringing students back is to have college football. So figure it out for yourself. Students are being brought back to campus so they can get the tuition, so they can have college football, because it's very difficult not to have a single student on campus and say, we're going to have a season. This is a billion-dollar industry. Yeah. We all profit from it, including myself. I don't want to act naive here. But are these players being taken care of? No, they're not. They are, as many have said, they're lab rats, and they're being exposed to who knows what. And the other argument, Molly, can be, well, they're young people, they're not going to get sick. How do we know that? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows anything about this virus, and we're 5 months into it.
That's Paul Feinbaum joining the crew this morning on First Take. It's First Take, your take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jeff Dickerson in for Jason Fitz. And today on ESPN Daily, J.J. Redick gives you a view from inside the NBA bubble with the Pelicans, from competition on the court to how he's keeping up his obsessive training and what's behind the message on his jersey. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It's our pleasure to bring in Tom Van Haren, ESPN college football reporter, with us on the Shell Pennzoil performance line. Tom, thanks so much for giving me some time here on this Monday. We're talking about the Pac-12 player unity group and demands that they have made thus far. Do you think, what's the likelihood that any of these demands will be met by the universities?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think some of the demands are a little bit lofty, and I think the players would admit that they know some of these are easier than others. I actually spoke to Dallas Hobbs, who plays for Washington State. He's one of the leader representatives for his school. And he said the safety regulations, the COVID-19 safety demands, those are non-negotiable for the players. They want those instilled, instituted. And then the other stuff they're willing to negotiate on. So some of the demands for distributing 50% of the conference's revenue evenly among athletes, it seems unfeasible. And I think probably the players know that. But some of the other stuff outside of COVID, you know, they're looking at trying to help with racial injustice and creating a task force and partnering with the conference. And I think some of that stuff, those issues are probably easier.
Could this be something, Tom, that extends beyond just the Pac-12? I mean, could athletes in the Big Ten, the SEC, the Big 12, could you see something like this happening in these other Power 5 conferences?
I think with this group coming out, and as large of a group as it is within the Pac-12, all of them coming together and uniting, I do think there is going to be some more confidence from other players to say, okay, there's a larger group of players speaking up about this. Maybe I can too. Whereas if it's just an individual or just a couple of players here and there, you probably don't have that group mentality, that group confidence to speak out. And I mentioned Dallas Hobbs, who I spoke with about this. He said they've already heard from other players in other conferences. They've seen on social media some other players in the SEC and a few other conferences across the country share on social media. And I think with the root issue being safety regulations around COVID-19 and then also racial injustice, I think a lot of players are probably on the same page with that. And just to give an example, I spoke with a player in the SEC. This was a few weeks ago. He said when players first got back to campus to report for voluntary workouts, his particular school, they were doing random testing for COVID-19, like it was random drug testing. They weren't testing every player. It was just randomized. Whoa. And the players didn't feel safe about that. And so they spoke up about it and got it changed. And now that's not happening anymore. So I think the players are starting to feel their voice is louder and stronger than it ever has been.
Talking with Tom Van Herren, our great ESPN college football reporter on First Take Your Take, ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Tom, there's been a lot of back and forth on what's taking place at Washington State. You said you spoke with one of the players on Washington State. What is happening with their head coach, and are some of these players being threatened that if they join the Pac-12 player unity group, that they're going to be punished and it's going to be viewed as them being against the program?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, and it's all kind of a rising or being associated with wide receiver Cassidy Woods, who he actually informed Nick Rolovich that he was opting out for the 2020 season because he has sickle cell trait, and it would be a risk for him amid this pandemic. And so this was actually before the Pac-12 Unity group released their statement or anything came out that Woods said that he was opting out. And Rolovich, according to one of our great reporters, Adam Rittenberg, Rolovich told Woods that he had no issue with him leaving or opting out. But he did say if he was participating in the group, in the Pac-12 Unity group, that there could be an issue if you align with them in terms of future stuff. So as of right now, I don't believe anybody is being cut or released from their scholarship if they're associated with this group. I don't think that's the case. But it is interesting that if Rolovich did say that it's going to be an issue if you align with that group, what that means for the future. I think that puts into question for a lot of players of what that means for them, what their future holds, and maybe it reinforces what they're asking for with these demands, that they don't feel like their value is being realized amid this pandemic and within college football.
And Tom, if Rolovich does feel that way, I mean, I think it's pretty safe to say that he's probably not the only coach in the conference that feels that way, right? I mean, we don't know that for sure, but I'm saying if that's the sentiment that some of these players are getting from him, I mean, I think that might speak to a larger issue.
Absolutely. And, one of the things that I noticed was when we broke this report, it was Adam Rittenberg, Mark Schlabaugh, and myself that worked on this before. Once our report came out, I started to get messages from coaches and personnel within the Pac-12 saying, what is this? And so a lot of them didn't even really know that it was coming. Some of them had an idea, but a lot of them didn't know that it was coming. And that was another thing that I spoke to Dallas Hobbs from Washington State about, was the surprise factor. Were the coaches upset because you didn't loop them in, or you didn't say, hey, we've got these issues just to let you know, we're going to come out with all this stuff. It's not against you. It's against the conference. And Dallas said their reasoning behind keeping the coaches in the dark really was they didn't want the coaches to know about it and not say anything. And then someone higher up in the conference find out that the coaches knew, and repercussions come after the coaches. But I think there was, speaking to some players and some people within the conference, I do think there were some mixed reviews from the coaches because they didn't know. They felt a little bit blindsided by it. And now this is something unprecedented that they've never had to deal with before amidst the pandemic that they've never had to deal with before. And so how do you handle this? What do you do going forward? There's no real blueprint for that.
Tom Van Herren joining us on First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. And pushing forward a little bit, Tom, aside from just the overall, of course, the health concerns with COVID-19, but certainly the social injustice issues that the players want to raise here with the Pac-12 Unity Group. Did what happened at Iowa maybe spur these players on to take a little bit more of a vocal stance with everything in terms of social injustice? Because, again, not to paint with a broad brush, Tom, but I find it hard to believe that Iowa would be the only school where some of these things might be happening, or players might be feeling a certain way, like they're being mistreated by the coaches and the administration.
Yeah, I think all of these instances that have popped up, I think they've all kind of snowballed into where we're at now, where these players feel like either they're fed up, or they just feel like this is the time that they have a platform that they can speak up and they need to speak up. And I can't remember a time where I've seen so many college football players, so many college athletes feel like their voice can change something, or they have the ability to change something. I don't think in the past, maybe even 5 to 10 years, that if something like this were to come up, that players would even speak up about it or say anything. It was just a different mentality than it is right now. And I think all of this has snowballed into where we're at. And a lot of these players, talking to them for this story, they've actually been talking back to July. July 1st, I believe, was when a lot of this started, where it initially started with the concerns about COVID-19, but as the group grew, as more players started to get involved with it, it evolved itself into, we need to not just focus on the one issue with safety. We've got to embody everything and encompass everything that everybody's concerned with, and use this platform now to make change as much as we can. And that's what they're doing with this group.
And Tom, lastly, with all your great reporting and you're talking to so many people and you're talking to so many players, I'm just wondering from the player's perspective. I mean, if you ask a coach, are you going to play this fall? Every coach is going to say, yeah. I mean, I think Ed Orgeron said he'll play in your backyard or something like that, right? I mean, that's just how coaches are wired. You know, Ed Orgeron will play in the swamp. Okay, great. But the players are the ones that are going to have to play ultimately. So when you talk to all these players, are they still optimistic? Do they still feel like it's going to be a reality that we're going to get a college football scheduled this fall?
I think so, and I think a lot of them still want to play. I mean, a lot of these players that I've talked to, even within this Pac-12 group, they still say they want to play. That the concern isn't that they just don't want to play. It's just that they want to do it safely, and they want to know that they're going to be looked after, that their best interests are being looked after, not the monetary value of what it could bring if we do play. So the vast majority of players that we've spoken to, even going back a few months, we did a survey with a bunch of anonymous players, and I actually spoke to some parents of college football players as well. It was the majority want to play and feel like they can do it, but there just needs to be guidelines. There needs to be transparency. There needs to be a certain set of rules that is followed by everybody strictly that can make it happen. And I think that's their main focus right now, is making sure the season happens, but making sure that their health and safety is also a priority.
Tremendous reporting, Tom. Keep up the outstanding work. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Tom Van Haren covers college football for ESPN with us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're brought to you by Shell V-Power Nitrile Plus Premium Gasoline. Players still want to play in college football. Completely understandable. We'll see if that happens this fall. They're playing in Major League Baseball, but obviously there's a concern, not just with the Marlins, with over 20 positive COVID-19 tests, but there is a situation developing in St. Louis. Could it be a lot worse for the Cardinals coming up today? Jesse Rogers, who covers MLB for ESPN, will join us coming up to discuss the latest with the Cardinals players testing positive for COVID-19. But first, it's time for some straight talk. You know what a full court press is in basketball, right? Full defensive coverage with no holes. Well, that's the kind of coverage you get with Straight Talk Wireless. It runs on America's best networks, same as big carriers, but for a lot less. Just $45 a month gets you the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for up to 50% less than the big carriers. No contract, full court coverage, 50% less. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. It's First Take, Your Take. I'm Jeff Dickerson, ESPN Radio and ESPN News. It's First Take, Your Take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jeff Dickerson sitting in for Jason Fitz. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Certainly encouraging news for the Phillies. after no new positive COVID-19 test. They can resume their series against the Yankees tonight. That's the good news today in Major League Baseball. We haven't had any official word yet on the further testing of the St. Louis Cardinals, but obviously I think there is some concern that the results are not going to be what you want. I mean, the Marlins a week ago began with four positive COVID tests in their organization, and then there was, like, before you know it, there was over 20. So what's going to happen in St. Louis? What's taking place around Major League Baseball? No better person to talk with than our Jesse Rogers, who covers Major League Baseball for ESPN. He's on the Shell Pennzoil performance line. Jesse, are we bracing for the worst here with St. Louis if these test results become known today?
Yeah, I think we are sort of bracing for the worst, but it may not even be today. And here's the big problem that I don't know that baseball really addressed going into this, and that is the incubation period, Jeff, of this thing, right? I mean, we know that you could test negative for three straight days, have the virus, and then on that fourth day actually test positive. It's exactly what's happened with the Marlins. Guys tested negative all week, and then on that fifth day of tests, they were positive. And so that's the concern with any of these teams. Yeah, oh, God, everyone's safe. We tested negative today, but then you have to wait for the next day and the next day. And I don't think they know exactly how long they should wait, but that's what's going on with the Cardinals now and these inconclusive theories. So there could be more than four, right? Again, guys that tested negative in the last couple of days yeah. could be positive. So it's a tightrope they're walking because of this incubation period and, of course, how contagious this virus is.
So, Jesse, I mean, in addition to covering Major League Baseball, the entire league, you know, you're around the Cubs a lot. And it, again, I'm as an outsider here. I guess we're all outsiders covering Major League Baseball these days, but any sport. But, you know, the way I look at it is that the Cubs and their best players, like Anthony Rizzo, from the very beginning, they've really seemed like they're taking this very seriously, aren't they? You know, they're the guys that are, hey, you got to wear your mask. You got to socially distance. Now, I'm not saying that the Cubs couldn't turn around tomorrow and have a bunch of tests, positive tests. You just don't know. But do you think it makes a difference, teams around Major League Baseball, where the leaders of the teams have set kind of a serious tone with this, and that's something that has trickled down to the rest of the clubhouse?
Not only that, I'll go a step further. That serious tone and that lockdown attitude has translated to better and more exciting play on the field. And follow my thinking on this. I think a team like the Cubs in their first road trip went hotel, stadium. I've talked to a lot of players, and that's all they did. So because they're bored out of their minds for 12 hours out of the day, when they get to the ballpark, that's when they can have fun and let loose a little bit. And I think that at the same time, they still have to practice the social distancing, and that may have contributed to what happened with the Marlins. Like, okay, we're not really doing anything, you know, away from the park, even if you think a couple players went out. It's the things they did at the park and on the plane that may have spread this thing, not wearing their masks where they're supposed to. So I think it's a combination of factors here that if you do the right things, then when you get on the field from innings 1 through 9, you can sort of let loose all that pent-up energy. You direct it in the right place. And that's one reason I think the Cubs are 7-2. They're not a perfect team, but they're off to a great start. They're the only team without a positive test among their players. I think it's all connected, and it does start with a core group that's been together for over a half a decade now. And that is not the case for every team. So I'm just talking about them in particular. I think things have worked out on and off the field, and I think it's connected.
Jesse Rogers, who covers MLB for ESPN, with us on First Take, Your Take. It's ESPN Radio and ESPN News. Obviously, Jesse, Rob Manfred is going to make it seem like the players are not following the rules. And that might be true. I mean, again, like something's going on with the Marlins and maybe the Cardinals here, how this could happen. But as you look at this big picture, I mean, isn't it going to be on everybody, the league and the players, to work hand in hand with this and all be on the same page for this season to be able to be finished?
Of course, but when it comes down to the sort of nitty-gritty, the minutia of life, it really is on the players. And I think there's sort of a misconception, in my opinion, that Rob Manfred, and coming down a little bit on the players, had nothing to do, or not nothing, but little to do with going out. I think it had to do with the every day, wear the mask in the bullpen, on the plane, do the right thing, social distance, don't high five. Because here's the problem. It's the spread that's the problem. They know that certain guys are going to get positive tests. But if they're doing the right things, it won't necessarily get to the rest of the team until that guy's taken out of the rotation. The problem is, Miami's a great example. I think their patient zero got infected just living his life in Miami. It had nothing to do with going out, in my opinion, because he tested positive the day after the Marlins were accused of going out. You wouldn't test positive that quickly. And 15 guys would have to test positive from going out. That didn't happen. He spread it to the rest of them, or a lot of them, in my opinion. And that man coming down on them, and that's where it's up to the players. You got to wear your mask in the right places. Right. You got to social distance. Don't high five. Don't celebrate. That's as big as going out, I think, because going out infects one guy. Going around the team as that infected guy spreads it, and that's the problem with the Marlins and maybe the Cardinals right now.
How can they police that, Jess? I mean, how can you tell someone that's been spitting their whole life on a baseball field, stop spitting? How do you tell them, hey, listen, you can't dogpile on a guy after a home run because you can't all be together? How do you – and I think too, Jesse, I mean, don't they tell these guys that you can only arrive at the ballpark with, like, one other person? Yet we've heard stories that teams are showing up, like, with 10 guys, you know, rolling into the clubhouse at the same time. Who is responsible? How can they find a way to change these behaviors that seem like they're just so ingrained with this baseball culture?
Yeah, they're trying. You know, they've assigned a compliance officer to each team. And when I say assigned, I'm using that loosely because the team is actually just – using one of its employees to be the guy that says, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, you should be doing this. But I don't think it's as easy as an outside entity coming in and doing it, right? The Cubs, for example, they've stated publicly it's their traveling secretary that is going to be or reminding guys what to do. But probably would have been better if, like, an outside cop did it, an independent guy. But that's not the case. So anyway, they're trying. They're taking some steps to address it, to have someone that actually is in charge other than, like, the manager to say, hey, we can't be doing this, we can be doing that. Let's see if it helps. Let's find out if that helps. It'll tell over time. I do think there's a reason for optimism, Jeff. Mm-hmm. I think at the beginning of this thing, there was a bumpy road during summer camp, at the beginning of summer camp, and now at the beginning of the regular season, there's been a bit of a bumpy road. But I think in both cases, they can find a level ground and the right protocols that fit for travel. I think it's evolving. I talked to a couple executives about that. They feel like the protocols are going to have to evolve a little bit. So let's not hit the panic button quite yet. The integrity of the competition has certainly been compromised when a 1-2 Phillies team is taking on a 7-1 Yankees team tonight. Right. But you know what? You make and get through it, and hopefully we can get to October with whatever in between.
Yeah, so lastly, Jesse, for the people you talk to, they believe that when Rob Manfred tells Carl Ravitch that he's not going to shut this down, that's not happening, he's not a quitter, they still believe wholeheartedly that this thing is going to be given a chance to keep going, right?
Yes, they do. They really do, and I think they feel like their system is evolving, their process is evolving. I think they were better with the Cardinals and Brewers than they were with the Phillies and Marlins, and maybe the next challenge will be better than the last one. So I do think they can handle it. It's not pretty. That's the phrase I'm going to use. It's not going to be pretty. The Marlins tomorrow night are going to play with half their taxi squad. The Brewers are playing tonight after having a weekend off. That's not good for pitching arms that have a routine and habit to them. That's not good for players' timing at the plate. But they're still playing. So, yes, I do think they're going to power through, even though it won't look or feel pretty.
Jesse, thank you so much. Keep up the great work, okay? We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, JD. Take care.
Jesse Rogers, ESPN MLB insider, with me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Jesse brings up a good point, too, about the competitive imbalance here. Look, I know these are major leaguers, but there's still a difference between a team that's played 10 games and a team that's played 2 or 3 games. I know this is their livelihood, but I'm just telling you, like, after this time off, after this, break, the season had not started, you need games. And the teams that have played more games absolutely have the advantage. But I also agree, too, that it does seem like with the Brewers and the Cardinals. It was definitely handled better by Major League Baseball than it was with the Marlins and the Phillies. That, again, I keep going back to it, that was the biggest mistake, was letting them play after the Marlins had the positive test before the final game of that series. That screwed up the Marlins. It certainly screwed up the Phillies, who are back in action tonight against the Yankees. But yeah, Major League Baseball could be learning their lesson. And if another outbreak happens on another team, hopefully by that third time, it'll be handled in an even better fashion than the previous two. All right, coming up, the NBA gave every other league a blueprint on how to handle COVID-19. So why hasn't MLB and the NFL followed its lead? That's all straight ahead. It's First Take, Your Take. I'm Jeff Dickerson, in for Jason Fitz. It's ESPN Radio and ESPN News. First Take, Your Take. Jeff Dickerson, in for Jason Fitz. It's ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. And don't forget, the NBA is on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight as Morant and the Grizzlies visit the Pelicans, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 6 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN Radio stations. We've spent so much of the show talking about Major League Baseball and what they haven't done right, and should they be in a bubble. The NFL, with the Doug Peterson news, the head coach of the Eagles testing positive for COVID-19. Now he's away from the team for a period of time. Like, what the NFL could be doing better. The New Orleans Saints did rent out four floors of a hotel in downtown New Orleans to create an optional bubble atmosphere for players and staff during training camp. Of course, it's optional, but Mike Triplett, who covers the Saints for us at ESPN, reports that a good majority of the Saints players, staff, and coaches will be utilizing that optional bubble. But still, there's a lot of trepidation with Major League Baseball continuing, with the Cardinals awaiting test results in the near future that could be very damaging, with the NFL still having players opting out. You know, the real nitty-gritty of the NFL season hasn't even happened yet. I mean, we're still not even practicing in the NFL. That'll be in about a week from now, and then the pads go on, I think, on August 17th. So with all these sports, there's this, ooh, it's nice that they're playing or they're trying to start training camp, but we don't have a ton of confidence in what the future may hold. Now, anything can happen in the NBA, but I think the NBA and the NHL as well, too. Well, let's also talk about the NHL with their two bubble cities in Canada, in Toronto and Edmonton. They really seem like they're doing things the right way. And what I find to be the most telling is that, yes, you've had some NBA players opt out for their reasons, understandable. But the real stars of the NBA, they're there. They're in Orlando. They've been there. They're playing. And I think the NBA is the one sport, along with the NHL, that we can focus more on what's actually taking place in terms of the games themselves than all these other issues. I mean, you talk about baseball, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh man, are they going to shut this down because of the Marlins and Cardinals? You talk about the NFL, and the first thing isn't like, hey, what's going on with that very mediocre quarterback battle in Chicago between Mitchell Trubisky and Nick Foles? It's, oh, Doug Peterson tested positive. This player opted out. That player opted out. All these Patriots are opting out. But, and I'll use the NBA again just specifically here. Now we're talking about the games we saw over the weekend. And I got to tell you, I had a chance to talk with Mark Kestisher, who's our voice of the NBA and ESPN Radio, over the weekend. You know, he's in Orlando. He's one of the few broadcasters permitted inside that bubble. And he just says that, you know, now his experience is different than the players, but his experience is so rigorous with the screening and sitting, you know, 70 yards away from, or whatever, from the players behind, you know, plexiglass and all the protocols, the testing that they have to go through in his sort of tier being a media member, that it really seems like the NBA is handling this the right way. And then you have someone with some questionable behavior like Lou Williams, who had to go to Magic City for the ribs last week, and he was immediately given the maximum quarantine time. And I think the players appreciate that. And I feel like, I'm sorry, wings, not ribs from Magic City. I got my menu confused there. My apologies. I think it just shows you that there is a certain level of trust that is in place between the NBA players and the commissioner and just the NBA in general. I don't think that trust exists in Major League Baseball, certainly not, between Rob Manfred and the players. In football, I mean, they just ratified a new CBA, but I don't get the sense that players in the NFL trust Roger Goodell and their owners like the NBA players, and the NBA owners and the commissioner have kind of found this common ground. So I think the fact that all these stars are down there, it seems like they're flourishing. It seems like they feel that they are safe. It really projects a really strong message. So, you know, the NBA, the NHL, I think it is moving in the right direction. I've enjoyed the basketball. The quality of play has been fine. The presentation, no problems there. I don't mind the graphics with the fans and everything. I think they're doing a really good job. The camera angles are tight on TNT and ESPN. So I think overall, the sport I've enjoyed the most watching because I'm the most at ease watching it, knowing that I can basically just focus on the games themselves and be entertained, is the NBA. I hope Major League Baseball gets there. I hope in the fall we've got football, the NFL, and college football, but it certainly seems like we've got a long way to go to get to that point. Coming up next, it's ESPN Radio Afternoon with Stan Verrett and Jen Latta. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Monday. I've enjoyed sitting in for Jason Fitz. I'm back tomorrow. I'm Jeff Dickerson. This is First Take, Your Take. It's ESPN Radio and ESPN News.